Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're video streaming. You can watch today's program, which I suggest because we have some really interesting guest segments coming up, by going to Progressive Radio Network Facebook, and you'll be able to see this. Today we're going to be looking at what happens to individuals, for example, who claim that they're not given an opportunity to speak, to challenge on any major forum what they see as what's wrong with environmental action. So today, time permitting, we intend to give a professor, respected at his institution, until they fired him, then he sued and he got back that he was wrongfully dismissed. And this gentleman will explain in his own research, 33-year researcher on Australia's Great Barrier Reef, that the causes of problems with the Great Barrier Reef had nothing to do with industrial sewage or human waste or, let's say, glyphosate or artificial fertilizers going into the water and destroying the reef. And I'm doing this because I want to give those people in the audience who say, well, you only carry those people who show what's wrong with the environment, and what if someone challenged that? Well, we're giving that person opportunity to offer their challenge. Then afterwards, I will offer my response to him. We're also today going to take a look at dietary supplements can help with schizophrenia. This is from the University College of London. And though I do not believe schizophrenia has been properly diagnosed and labeled, I do believe that some people suffer from conditions that require medical intervention. We've all seen those type of people. And right now, they're flooding the streets of America. Many of the homeless are that way. They're in our jails, and our jails are not prepared to handle people with mental conditions. And frequently, as happened in the last year or two, some of those people have actually been killed in prison by the inmates or, in one case, by the guards hosing down a man with scalding water because he wouldn't obey. Well, it turns out he had a severe mental condition. He was schizophrenic. So what can we do? What do we know that can do to help? I'm going to talk about that. We have a lot of segments on the environment today. And also, is it better to feed children or to feed the military-industrial complex? It's a legitimate question. I believe you understand where I'm going to come down on this, but other people would come down and have, including Kamala Harris and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Virtually everyone running for president comes down squarely, 100%, feed the American military complex and don't feed children because they've done nothing, zero, zip, to feed the children, let alone stop the abuse of Saudi Arabia, a maniacal effort by the Saudis, and a megalomaniac who runs Saudi Arabia, a massive killer. Nothing. So we're going to share that insight as well. Also, this evening on the Progressive Commentary Hour, which is a really thinking person's program, we have a rare opportunity to interview a person who's an expert on what's going on between Pakistan and India in a disputed area, and with lots of problems, and none of this is being reported in the mainstream media. We'll report on it in depth for a whole hour. We're also adding video streaming so you can watch the guests and watch the special footage and documentaries over the next, year. And we're doing that as we speak. So 7 o'clock, you won't want to miss the Progressive Commentary Hour. But we start with the latest on health and healing, and this is out of the University College of London. There's a dietary supplement. It is called sarcosine, S-A-R-C-O-S-I-N-E, and it can help with schizophrenia as part of a holistic approach, complementing the traditional approaches. Now, I'm opposed, based upon science and humanistic principles, to the entirety of the current psychiatric model for both diagnosing and treating disease. I've written articles on this. I did an award-winning documentary called The Drugging of Our Children. And I have a new documentary that I'm still working on that will be out within the year called Manufacturing Madness. And in that, I show the entire history of the psychiatric and mental health field from the person who started it, who was the first leading psychiatrist, who was also one of the founders, the signers of the Declaration of Independence, and whose face still adores the seal of the American Psychiatric Association, and Benjamin Rush, and how it's all been unscientific. The medications, the lobotomies, the electroconvulsive therapies. So, and then the diagnosing. They're diagnosing normal behavior as brain chemical imbalances. However, that said, there are psychiatrists like Dr. Peter Bregan, Dr. Michael Schachter, and others who know that something is wrong and try to rebalance it. And this began the entire field of orthomolecular psychiatry. Now, a friend of mine, in fact, two friends, Dr. Abram Hoffer, MD, PhD from Canada, and Dr. Linus Pauling, founded the American or worldwide society dealing specifically with natural approaches to rebalance a person's brain chemistry who's got depression, anxiety, bipolar, a psychotic, or neurotic episodes. So this is something to help. And I would use this in conjunction with tapping therapies and other non-invasive therapies. And there are clinicians and therapists using non-invasive therapies, meaning non-pharmaceutical therapies. So what this is, this sarcosine represents a very logical treatment, and there are clinical trials that shows that it can be extremely helpful. Well, that's what you want to do. You want to get a person out of some of their extreme episodes. And sarcosine naturally occurs in foods like legumes, for example. You can even buy it as a dietary supplement. No one does, but it's there, and it promotes brain health. And I would not agree with all the claims being made about it. I don't believe they're backed by adequate evidence. But according to this Professor Curtis writing on this in a peer-reviewed journal, that it can help with the functioning of receptors for glutamate. That's a common neurotransmitter in the brain, and that sarcosine can help glutamate receptors to work better and therefore stop some of the hyperagitation that you will find in people who are bipolar, diagnosed with bipolar, etc. Also, the world's largest evidence review of nutritional supplements for mental health. This was the NICM, National Research Institute of Australia, equivalent to our National Academy of Sciences. And their idea was, is it possible to have food good for your mood? Now, this is something I know a great deal about because for almost 50 years, I've been using food and mood in a way that benefits the person. In fact, many of you might remember I did a PBS special called Get Healthy Now, and there were a panel of 12 doctors on there. One of those doctors was Dr. Oz, who, that was his first television appearance that I'm aware of, and launched him into this. And all the people had something in common on the panel. They all use nutrients and food to help people with emotional and mental conditions. I wrote a book on it called The Food-Mood Connection and wrote several articles on The Food-Mood Connection for the Townsend Letter for Doctors. But a new study into mental health and nutrient supplementation has taken a big leap forward by establishing a gold standard for which nutrients are proven to assist in the management of a range of mental health disorders, as well as established relationship between poor diet and mental illness. And there's now a vast body of research examining the benefits of nutrient supplementation in people with mental disorders. And the world's largest review, what's called a meta-analysis of top-tier evidence published online in the World Psychiatry, examined 33 meta-analyses of randomized controlled trials representing 10,951 people with mental health disorders, including depression, stress, anxiety disorders. bipolar and personality disorders, including ADHD, and their summary is this. The strongest evidence was found in the omega-3 fatty acids, that's the polyunsaturated fatty acids, and they found that was best for helping reduce depression and reducing symptoms of depression beyond the effects of antidepressants alone. There was also evidence that the omega-3s could also have a benefit for ADHD. There was emerging evidence of the amino acid N-acetylcysteine, also useful as an adjunctive treatment in mood disorders, including schizophrenia, and special types of folate, meaning methylated folate. And again, I looked at the amounts, they're way too small they're using. So I'm surprised they found any effect. But if you're taking it at 1 milligram of methylated folic acid and 1 milligram of B12, you're going to find a major difference in working with major depression. And that's important. Now, what we did is recently, in fact, it was just 2 weeks ago, that we ended a 4-week study. And this is for people who had diagnosed depression and anxiety disorders, who had low self-esteem, loneliness problems. And for 4 weeks, I gave protocols starting with diet, exercise, stress management techniques, and then lectures on how not to continue processing information from a defeatist or insecure emotional position. And at the end, we had about a 90% success rate, 90% in 4 weeks of improving or reversing these very same conditions. And these people had had these for years. And they also were getting better night's sleep. They had more energy. They felt better on all levels. So it's what you do. Unfortunately, with these studies that I just referred to, they're generally using a single nutrient. And a single nutrient is not going to give you the same benefit as if you put together multi factors, meaning you bring diet and supplementation and behavior modification all together. That's where you get your best results. From Yale University comes a new study out just today that a high-fat, high-carbohydrate diet can affect your brain, not just your physical appearance. So your body may be fine as far as it looks and your percentage of muscle and body fat, but that doesn't mean your brain is working well. And so you don't have to be obese or even overweight to have the quality of fats in the diet adversely affect your brain. And that's what the recent Yale study discovered, that high-fat diets, that your many of your common diets today, your caveman diet, you know, the keto diet, it contributes to irregularities in the hypothalamus. And by the way, the hypothalamus is in a region of the brain which regulates body weight and homeostasis and metabolism. The study evaluated how the consumption of a high-fat typical American diet that includes high amounts of fats and refined carbohydrates stimulates hypothalamic inflammation, and then that ends up leading to malnutrition. So you can be overfed and undernourished. And that reaffirms that inflammation occurs in the hypothalamus as early as 3 days after consuming a high-fat diet. So you eat a diet, and you think, okay, it's over, it's digested, eliminated, all's good. No, it isn't. That can upset your cellular mechanisms. And that's why, if you've been on a bad diet, you've got to detox. And detox minimally requires about 3 months, minimum, to get rid of the heavy metals and all of the unhealthy bacteria that you've created in the gut. So don't think just by going on a weekend sometimes you're going to get rid of all this. It doesn't work that way. From Sung Kwan University in South Korea, which is doing a lot of really good work. I see study after study. Red ginseng, what is called red Korean ginseng, has anti-inflammatory properties. And they studied the anti-inflammatory properties of Panax ginseng, P-A-N-A-X. It's also commonly known as Korean red. And it's very good for treating arthritis, gastritis, and hepatitis. And why? Because there are chemicals in the ginseng called ginsenosides, and they're the active ingredient. And they have the anti-cancer and anti-inflammatory properties. So take the red ginseng and help turn off a lot of inflammation in your body. Also, from the University of Lausanne in Switzerland, once or twice weekly daytime naps are linked to lower heart attack and stroke risk. So let's go right to the issue. A daytime nap taken once or twice a week can lower the risk of having a heart attack or stroke. That's according to the online journal Heart. And so I would say if you can do it even three or four times a week, that's good. You don't have to take a long nap. 15 minutes, 20 minutes is fine. And so it works. And probably one of the reasons it works is because you can have stress build up throughout the day. And when stress is in your life, you're also having a much greater risk of a heart attack or stroke because of the hormones and the stress hormones led by cortisol and epinephrine, norepinephrine, the catecholamines, and adrenaline. So by taking a nap, you're bringing all those hormones back down to a more normal level. And that reduces your chance of a stroke or heart attack. From Cork, C-O-R-K, University, that's in Ireland, scientists find psychiatric drugs affect your gut content. It simply means that when you're taking these antidepressants or other psychiatric drugs, you're going to change good bacteria into bad bacteria. And we want only good bacteria for the microbiome, for the hundreds of billions of bacteria in our body. Because the more good bacteria you have, the healthier your whole body and immune system is. And it also can impact your brain. Bad bacteria in the gut from sugar and alcohol and meat can cause mood swings. So, good bacteria, better brain. And also from the University Hospital in Munster, which is in Germany, physically fit adults have fitter brains. Yeah. Healthier body, healthier brain. This was a large German study where the scientists have shown that physical fitness is associated with better brain function and brain structure and in adults. And this has opened the possibility that increasing fitness levels, which we should be doing, will improve cognitive ability, like memory and problem solving. And so that's the key. So this is from a peer-reviewed journal called Scientific Reports. So the more exercise you can do, both resistance and intense and long-term aerobic, like power walking, biking, jogging, the healthier your brain's going to be. And that's important because it impacts the white matter of the brain, which frequently shrinks as we get over the age of 40. And from our environmental segment today, the organic and non-GMO report shows that glyphosate causes disease across several generations. This is from Washington State University. Researchers have found a variety of diseases and other health problems in the second and third generation offspring of rats exposed to glyphosate, the world's most popular weed killer and the main ingredient in Roundup herbicide. So it can affect the kidneys, the ovaries, causing birth abnormalities. And people have been eating glyphosate in everything. This was published in Journal of Scientific Reports. So what's the solution? Simple. Don't buy anything that you cannot prove is organic and ideally locally grown. Now, I said earlier, what should we invest in? And this was a segment from Common Dreams. And it talked about the fossil fuel divestment program. And people power is winning. $11 trillion have been taken out of investment funds and reinvested in things that represent power to the people. In other words, take it away from fossil fuels and put it in something that's more important. It really stops or reverses global warming and helps people. So that is good news. There's more than 1,110 institutions with over $11 trillion in assets. And they're now starting to shift where they're investing in those assets, the things that do not cause pollution or destruction of the planet. And so I commend them for all that effort. Also, there is a predator, a new predator, joining the other jackals in the White House. And you probably have never heard of this person, but according to Jim Hightower, you should know about him. And because he is about to become America's Mother Nature's steward, he will oversee everything in the in all of our national parks and protecting public lands for posterity. But unfortunately, he's not a steward. He is a predator. He's not a protector. His name is William Perry Pendley, P-E-N-D-L-A-Y. And for more than 40 years, he's been a fringe political operative and lawyer for a network of dopey anti-environmental extremists intent on helping corporate predators grab and plunder our natural assets for private profit. And now, what we have is Donald Trump has named Pendley to be acting head of the Bureau of Land Management. Yes, a guy who favors the wholesale privatization of your and my public lands is to oversee the future of America's public lands. Indeed, Pendley has been lost in the ultra-right wing weeds for years, screeching that the founding fathers intended all lands owned by the federal government to be sold. Wow. Just another one of those great white sharks looking for a nosebleed. Now, Jack Rasmus is a very competent and qualified person looking at our economy. And he raises some interesting questions about what is the true unemployment rate. Well, I've done all the research that I can that shows our real unemployment rate is 22% or more. We're right up there with Spain and Greece. You would think that we only have 3.6% unemployment. It's not true. According to Rasmus, the real unemployment rate is completely different and much higher. Here's why. Let me explain this. 3.7% is the U.S. U3 rate per the Labor Department, but that's the rate only for full-time employed. There are 103 million Americans who are not included in that 3.7%. What the Labor Department calls the U6 includes what it calls discouraged workers, meaning you simply have, you've looked for a job and can't find one in the past 4 weeks. Then there's what's called the missing labor force, those who haven't looked in the past year. They've given up, and they're not calculated. And you're talking about tens of millions of people there. And then you have your U3 unemployment rate number, and there are people who are out of work and actively looking for work, but they're not counted as unemployed, and therefore you have this 3.7% unemployment rate. By the way, the U6 also includes what the Labor Department calls involuntary part-time employed. It should include the voluntary part-time as well. It does not. See, they're not actively looking for work, even if unemployed. But even the involuntary part-time is itself underestimated. The Labor Department counts only those involuntarily part-time unemployed whose part-time job is their primary job. It does not count those who have second and third involuntary part-time jobs. Well, how many people do you know today who are poor, who are working two jobs or more? They're not included in the unemployment rate. So you see, we have so many people who are not included. So they start posturing that the economy is great for some corporations and individuals, it is, that our unemployment is low. It is not. It's very high. And they're only looking at 60,000 households to get these figures. Well, what if you're looking at the wrong 60,000 households? What if you're in those 60,000 households, the majority of them are working? Then you're going to skew the figure completely. So we've been lied to, and that's unfortunate. And by the way, yesterday I played two segments. One was the CIA talking about how much control they had over the media. It's massive. Today, there's no major corporate media that the CIA or intelligence agencies or the deep state operatives, you're looking at the Council on Foreign Relations, the most powerful group of people to form policy, and it doesn't matter to them. Get over this left, right, conservative, liberal. It is irrelevant to these people. Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, about 300 different think tanks in a think tank that takes people from the think tank who belong to an ideological reference point. And then they're the ones invited on to television shows. I remember back when Viagra just came on the market, and I was called to come out and debate them. So every day for 5 days, I debated pro-Viagra doctors, generally urologists. And they would tell you why it's so important and a great discovery, and I was telling you why it's dangerous and cause disease and heart attacks. I was right. They were wrong. Yes, it can allow some men who have erectile dysfunction to have an erection, but a glass of beet juice and some L-arginine and L-choline can do the same thing. Increase your nitric oxide with beet juice and combine that with pomegranate, and you're doing the same thing, but in a healthy way. And also, why don't you have people go in and have themselves properly diagnosed? It could be blocked arteries, which it frequently is. So open up the arteries with a healthy diet, as Dean Ornish has shown you can do. Nope, that's how it works. Where do you think those medical doctors came from? When Dean Ornish and I were debating a whole panel on PBS National on the quality of the American diet, where do you think those other people came from? Always think tanks. And the think tanks are not liberal or conservative. That's a faux exterior. They're people who are agenda-driven. I'll give you an example of this. You have a lot of shows that are very pro, let's say, nativism, nationalism, and identity politics, such as Sean Hannity. Now, almost on every single issue, when it involves Venezuela, oh, it's a socialist nation that, you know, is killing its own people, they're eating dog food, they're eating corpses, whatever stupid things come out of his mouth. He is wrong, but he will only have on people who advocate that John Bolton's a great, you know, leader. He's not. He's a human version of a walrus with a mindset of a crocodile. And so any time you can invade a country, destroy a country, destroy its leadership to engage in regime change, Sean's on board. Always are brave men and women, always. What about those people who are neither brave, but are fully capable of destroying other people's homes and lives, arresting people, interrogating people in torture? Are those brave people? Are they heroes? No, there are brave people who protect us. Not every cop is a guy who's going to shoot a black person in the back of the head, but there are a whole group who will do that. So why can't we have systems where we teach people what it is to be a police officer? And teach people what it is to be in a country where we have decided to invade. Are these people aware of the geopolitical underpinnings? No, they're not. So when they do something, they come back and it's harrowing to them. It's like they were in a horror show and they were the monster and others were victimized. How do I know? Because I've interviewed thousands of former GIs. I've done 4 films on GIs, the last being American Veterans Forgotten Betrayed. How many hours do you think I spent per day down in Florida interviewing these people who hate not the United States? They hate the party politics. They hate all the news media, the Bill O'Reillys and the people. Where are they now? They would tell us. They champion us going to war. It was all so glorious in winning against Saddam Hussein or in Afghan or someplace. Now here we are. Our bodies are riddled with disease from depleted uranium. Our brains are adversely affected by the traumas that we saw or experienced, the abuses we saw, the lack of the human respect for life. We destroyed families. What do you think that does to a person? You can live a sanitized life and be a killer, like sitting in one of those stupid bunkers out in the Nevada desert and, you know, killing all the people to get that one target. How do you know that one target is guilty? You don't know. There's no certainty in the CIA. It's a bunch of fools, a bunch of idiots. Should be closed down. All those agencies should be closed down. They're just utterly corrupt. They're massive cancers, as we've seen, yet they keep growing and we keep feeding them. and the people in the media, like the Sean Hannitys, continue to protect them. And everyone they have on, every single person they have on, is there to justify improper decisions. You never hear them going after their own. It's as true on MSNBC and New York Times, where they did not condemn and should have been condemned for eternity Hillary Clinton's supporting the coups in Honduras that completely destroyed a democratically elected president who was engaged in land reform. Now all these hundreds, 500 in the last year, of these local people, peasants and activists have been killed. And who sheds a tear? And all the tens of thousands in Libya. And who sheds a tear? Anyone on the left? No, not if you're a corporate leftist or corporate rightist. The right doesn't care about anything. They're completely, they are stone-cold emotional zombies. But we pretended that the left actually had a heart. Yeah, of stone. All of them. Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, selfish, narcissistic, sociopaths, interested only in themselves. I'll say it because I'm not afraid of them. Yet we know what they do to people that go against them. But would you rather be a person that bite your tongue when you know the truth, or just let things happen and think it's not me that's being a target? Well, right now we're all targets. And here's the CIA. Back in the 1960s, the CIA official, Cord Meyer, said the agency needed to, quote, count the compatible left. He actually said that. All right, this is according to Edward Curtin on Global Research. Many of you may not know Cord Meyer, but that's what he said about the CIA. He knew that drawing liberals and leftists into the CIA's orbit was the key to efficient propaganda. Right-wing and left-wing collaborators were needed to create a powerful propaganda apparatus that would be capable of hypnotizing audiences into believing that the myth of American exceptionalism and its divine right to rule the world, its manifest destiny, that it showed and the colonization of America and the destruction of all the Native Americans and the exploitation of all those who were used as slaves. And by the way, you can agree or disagree on those people who say if anything was associated with slavery, tear it down. Tear it down. Okay, good. There are 14 major, major pieces of architecture in America that were built by slaves. Tear them down. Starting with the White House, and I've got a whole bunch of other monuments we could tear down, not just some statues. You see, don't be half-measured. But the CIA, therefore, secretly worked to influence America and world opinion through its literary and intellectual elites. After all, who do you are more likely to trust? Someone who appears to be intellectually capable, appearing on Rachel Maddow's show, boy, that's an oxymoron, and who are purely propagandists, but people believe them because they're left. Yeah, Francis Stoner Saunders' comprehensive book, read the book, is called The Cultural Cold War. It's an old book. It was published back in 1999. It was called The CIA and the World of Arts and Letters. And Joel Whitney followed this up with a 2016 book called Finks, How the CIA Tricked the World's Best Writers, with particular emphasis on the complicity between the CIA and the famous literary journal, the Paris Review. And by the mid-1970s, as a result of the Church Committee that I showed you yesterday on the air, it seemed as if the CIA, the National Security Agency, and especially the FBI, totally corrupt organization, had been caught in flagrant, dictatorial and disgraced efforts. And they confessed their sins for a moment and resolved to go and sin no more, but they did. Wasn't it in 1977 Carl Bernstein wrote a long piece for Esquire called The CIA and the Media, naming names of journalists in the media, the New York Times, CBS, that worked hand in glove with the CIA, propagandizing the American people and the rest of the world. It seemed as if all would be hunky-dory now that the bad guys had been purged from the American free press. How not? And by that I mean the vast numbers of people who wanted to re-stick their heads into the sand and believe, as Ronald Reagan's complete total team of truth-tellers would announce, that it was morning in America again, with the free press reigning and the neoconservatives, many of whom had been converted from their leftist views, running things in Washington. How stupid. So again, it is morning in America. September, what is September 10th today? I have a special one-hour premiere tomorrow on 9/11. And the headline from National Public Radio announces the glad tidings that NPR has named a new CEO. His name is John Lansing. And the headline says he is, quote, a veteran media executive. Yeah? Not what we found out. So are we to be reassured, NPR? Wonder bread for the brain? It goes on to say that Mr. Lansing is currently the chief executive of the government agency, the U.S. Agency of Global Media. Don't they oversee Voice of America, Radio and Television Marty, and Radio Free Europe, and Radio Liberty, among others? We are furthermore reassured that NPR, that Lansing, quote, made his mark in his current job by stirring defenses of journalism free from government interference. My God, almost everything on NPR is government and corporate influenced. Same with PBS, those hackneyed, functional, academic literate, but humanistically illiterate mop heads. That's the best I can say for PBS. I've had 32 programs on PBS, including its most successful in its history by an individual. And I still am in utter contempt of the management and how the old boys system works there. Same as in all other groups, though. So the announcement goes on to say, Lansing has earned an advanced degree in political agility. Yeah, guess he has. At the U.S. Agency for Global Media, Lansing championed a free press, even as leaders of many of the nations move against it. Governments around the world are increasingly cracking down on the free flow of information, silencing dialogue and dissent, and distorting reality. So he says, all the while, all the while, he is leading America's propaganda campaign all over the world through the media that the United States government controls, the National Security Agency controls, the CIA controls. So let me just get this right. We are supposed to feel reassured that the new head of NPR, the chief of all U.S. propaganda, is a champion of free press. Oh, my God. My God, even the people on The View would find that challenging. Perhaps NPR will soon enlighten the American public by interviewing its new head, honcho, and asking him if he thinks Julian Assange and Chelsea Manning, by exposing America's war crimes, and Edward Snowden, by exposing U.S. government vast electronic surveillance programs of its own citizens, deserves to be jailed and exiled for doing the job American mainstream free press failed to do. NPR failed to do. Any of the programs on NPR failed to do. What NPR failed to do, perhaps they will ask if he objects to the way his own government interfered in the lives of these three courageous, in my opinion, real heroes. People who revealed the truth that every citizen of a free country is entitled to. Perhaps they will ask him if the U.S. government's persecution of these truth-tellers, real truth-tellers, is what he means when he says a war on truth. Perhaps they will ask him if he thinks the Obama and Trump administrations have been distorting reality and waging a war on truth. Perhaps he will tell us how Hillary Clinton should be in some way seen in a positive life after the seven countries in the world that she was personally responsible for seeing their governments were interfered with, the people were made worse, multiple deaths occurred. Perhaps, perhaps not. I'm Gary Knoll. Now we're going to go one last thing before we go to one of the clips. The question is, should they feed hungry children or a war machine? Why? Because every dollar of public money financing the U.S. militarism abroad is a dollar that could fight hunger and homelessness or climate change. Who says? Media Benjamin, Open Democracy, says the humanitarian coordinator for Yemen, Lisa Grande, put out a heartbreaking call for nations to make good on their pledges to send humanitarian aid to feed destitute families in war-torn Yemen. Unless the funds promised are received soon, upwards of 12 million people could be reduced and at least 2.5 million malnourished children will die. So when money doesn't come, people die. It's that simple. But we have a blockade. Does anyone in the White House even have the intellectual acumen to understand what it means to support the worst violators of human life in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, seconded only by the United Arab Emirates, and, you know, the ones who own that tacky city of Dubai, followed by Abu Dhabi and Qatar? Yeah, so the next time someone says, we support women, which women? We support children. Which children do you support? Clearly, you're not supporting the women and children in Yemen or Venezuela or Honduras or the Ukraine or Syria. So tell me again. Maybe I'm just a little slower today than I was yesterday. If you're really supporting people, is it just a nice euphemism so you can assuage your own guilt for doing nothing fundamental to change the suffering of the vast majority of people on this planet? Well, that's for each person to decide. Now we're going to take you over to, let's go to this climate change professor, Peter Ridd, and let's hear from Peter Ridd. Now, mind you, he is a longtime tenured professor in Australia. He's published a lot of peer-reviewed journals. And for the person who said, why don't you put on someone who challenges your positions on global warming, here it is. We're allowing this Professor Ridd a forum.
Countless all heard that the Great Barrier Reef is on its last legs and it's been smothered by sediment, polluted by fertilizer and pesticides, and it's killed by dredging and, of course, climate change. So who here, put your hands up, believes that story is true as a matter of interest? Right. Well, that's interesting. So, I mean, out there, almost everybody believes it true. There's literally hundreds of millions of people around the world who think that. So you guys now have got a little bit of a tricky question because you've been told it's dead and you believe it's dead. So how are you going to tell this? Am I a whistleblower and the world has been conned, or am I a complete lunatic? And, of course, the way you decide is that you'll listen to my arguments, that this is the libertarian way. But, unfortunately, that's not the way of a modern university, as we will see in a minute. So I'll give you, before we go into my little tricky situation with the university, I'll give you some facts about about the reef. Climate change is supposed to be killing all the corals, but did you know that most of the corals that live on the Great Barrier Reef also live in Indonesia and Thailand, where the water is 1 or 2 degrees hotter, and they actually grow 50% faster there, in fact, probably more. Coral bleaching, which you've heard such a lot about, is not a new phenomenon. It's been going on for 100 million years or so. It's like a bushfire. It looks terrible, but the corals rapidly recover from it. You would have heard statistics like a third of the reef has died in the 2016 mass bleaching event. Well, actually, when you look at the statistics in a great deal of detail, and you've got to dig deep, I can tell you, you find that probably about 5% of the coral has died, maybe 10% if you really stretch the numbers ridiculously. That sounds like a lot of coral, but consider that between 2011 and 2016, the southern part of the Great Barrier Reef, the amount of coral increased by 250%. So the change of 5% or 10% downwards is really doesn't add up to a hill of beans. Sediment is supposed to be smothering the reef, and this is one of my area of expertise because I was actually involved with inventing the instruments that have measured sediment out on reefs. So my group has done more measurements of sediment on the reef than anybody else and probably everybody else put together. Turns out that there's about 100 times more sediment that gets resuspended from waves and goes onto the reef than comes down all the rivers from all the farms put together. And it's that wave stirring that's most important. And of course, then you have cyclones. They suspend so much sediment, it's just not funny. If you actually go out to the Great Barrier Reef, you're flat out even finding a single grain of sediment on the reef itself that comes from land. And you can tell whether it comes from land because the sediment on the reef is made out of broken down calcium carbonate, coral skeletons, totally different composition. And the sediment from land just isn't out there. Dredging is also supposed to be killing the reef. But in the last two decades, a couple of $100 million has been spent monitoring dredging operations to see how much it kills. And basically, apart from one or two in Western Australia where they actually dredge through a reef, you're flat out measuring even a single coral that dies in most of these things. And on that one where they did drill through the reef, they found that the effect of dredging goes maybe 2 or 3 kilometres. But most of the reefs on the Great Barrier Reef are, well, on average 1,000 kilometres from a particular port, and are almost always between 50 and 100 kilometres from the nearest port. So they really are not affected. Coral growth rates have increased by 10% since the 1940s. Pesticides never get out to the reef in quantities that would affect the reef. In fact, they're in such low quantities you can barely even measure them, even with the most accurate scientific instruments. Crown of thorns starfish are entirely natural, and sediment cores indicate that there have been plagues of them around for time immemorial. They are not like cats or tame cane toads. They are actually a native Australian species, just like a kangaroo or an echidna. Coral certainly fluctuates in coral cover over time, but the amount of coral that we've got now is not significantly different to when records properly started to begin in the 1985. But the scientific consensus is that the whole thing is on its last legs, and this is a big deal now if you're from North Queensland, because every single one of our major industries is affected by restrictions caused by the supposed demise of the Great Barrier Reef. Sugar, cattle, mining, port dredging, and the tourist industry, because the whole world knows that the reef is dead, so why bother coming? So the question is, how could this all be so wrong? It sounds like a bit of a crazy story that so many scientists could be wrong, and I'm the only one. I'm not the only one, by the way, but I'm one of the few who thinks that this is all a load of rubbish. Well, I've actually got some bad news for you. This is not the only area where scientists get it wrong. Who here has heard of the replication crisis? Hands up. Who here has not heard of the replication crisis? All right. Well, frankly, shame on you, because it's the biggest thing in science in the last 40 years. But you do have an excuse, right? The replication crisis is where we're finding when we try to repeat science that's already been done, we find it's wrong half the time, right? So this is why you've never heard of it, because scientists don't tend to like to blow the trumpet on this one too much. Can you imagine any other profession where it's wrong half the time? You know, perhaps flying an aeroplane. Aeroplanes only crash half the time. Right. Now, this is just not me saying this, all right? This is the big journals and the big national science organisations. We're talking about this. Possibly the most famous quote on this is by a chap called Horton in the leading medical journal, The Lancet. Very famous. He said, "The case against science is straightforward. Much of the scientific literature, perhaps half, may simply be untrue. Afflicted by studies with small sample size, tiny effects, invalid exploratory analysis, flagrant conflicts of interest, together with an obsession for fashionable ideas of dubious importance, science has taken a turn towards darkness." And then John Ioannidis from Stanford University, who in my view is actually the father of the replication crisis, wrote a very famous paper which has been cited more than any other paper in the last few years, called Why Most Published Findings Is False. He reckons that we're wasting about 85% of our science resources following bad science effectively down a rat hole. So yes, scientists can get it wrong, and they can get it a lot wrong, and a lot of scientists can get it all wrong on one particular thing without any problems. All right, so how did this get me into a spot of bother? Well, for the IPA, I wrote a chapter in a book on climate change and how climate change affects the reef or doesn't affect the reef. The IPA organised an interview with the Alan Jones where I said the words to the effect that in the light of the replication crisis, which shows about a 50% failure rate, If organisations use solely peer review as their checking mechanism, then their results could not be trusted. 50% isn't trustworthy. Now, it was a tough thing that I said, and I named a couple of organisations, and I did not expect them to be particularly happy with that. I expected them to argue, you know, Peter, you're wrong because, well, whatever. But what actually happened, well, I was called into my dean's office and given a brown envelope with allegations of serious misconduct. By the way, serious misconduct, the difference between serious and normal misconduct is you can be fired for serious. So they chose that one. They told to keep all the allegations secret. In my view, that was in total contravention of my work contract. I contacted the IPA just to let them know what was going on. They were very generous and they gave me some legal help, and there was quite a bit of legal to and fro. JC was very insistent that everything was kept secret. The legal things were going pretty well for that, for me, I thought. But then I got called up to the Dean's office a second time and given 25 more serious misconduct allegations, mostly for not keeping things secret. They trawled through my emails. They had no reason to do it. They trawled through my emails for dirt. They read every single one. And I can tell you that you start to sweat when you're reading a 128-page document of allegations which they've dredged from your emails. You wonder, well, what have I said? And when I got to the end of it, I breathed a huge sigh of relief because I'd actually not said anything that I was ashamed of, which was a surprise. But some of the allegations were really incredible. They objected to me emailing my wife. In another email, this was emailing my wife about the allegations. In another email, I complained to a friend that the university was Orwellian for not allowing me free speech. So JCU then read my emails and complained that I was not allowed to call them Orwellian. I thought it must have been a joke that they actually had some sorts of sense of humour, but actually they just didn't realise that they had proven themselves to be Orwellian and that Big Brother really was watching me. I'll show that they don't have had a sense of humour a little bit as well. The case dragged on for...
Okay, we're running short on time, but the entire interview, which is about a half hour, you can watch on Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. And he makes a good presentation. And if you're a layperson, it's a convincing presentation that here he was speaking the truth and they were offended by his truth and wanted to censor him. And therefore they fired him. And he fought back and he won. That's part of the story. But there's more to it. Former professor of geophysics at James Cook University in Australia, they said he was breaching the university's employment code of conduct because he was disparaging his colleagues at the university whose views on the demise of the coral reef he disagreed with. Again, you can have people agreeing or disagreeing on an issue, and you could be both partly right or completely unright. You could be wrong on these. But in any case, here's what is not said. Here's what he doesn't talk about, and that is that RID won his case for being unlawfully dismissed by the school, and I agree that he should have been rehired. I agree he has a right to give his views, but the personal fundraising for his for-profit consultancy firm comes from firms engaged in marine dredging operations and coal terminal projects. Funding backers include the Institute of Pacific Affairs, a right-wing think tank funded by mining magnate Gina Reinhart, who opposes climate change and is funding his legal costs against the university. He's the director of the Australian Environmental Foundation, sounds good, but it's a front group for the Institute of Public Affairs, largely funded by the industrial, agricultural, and fossil fuel industries. In 2017, RID wrote a paper that, quote, "The coral is the least endangered of any ecosystem to future climate change," a signatory on the institutional statement that deny climate change, including the Cato Institute that believes climate change is overstated and has stated coral is the, quote, "least endangered of any ecosystem." This month, he started a lecture tour. Good. Let him get his point of view out there. But who funded his tour? The sugarcane industry, to put forth arguments that farmland chemicals, runoff of those chemicals, and pollution from those chemicals does not significantly damage nature or the reef coast. And a group of Australian scientists on the Great Barrier Reef have launched their own campaign to discredit the sugarcane propaganda that RIT has been promoting, describing it as the same strategy used by the tobacco industry. And their scientific evidence states that two-thirds of the northern reef, of the coral reef, was severely bleached, and there has been minimal recovery due to policies to regulate industrial contamination, but necessary coral spawn is bleached areas to 90%. And corporations and big agriculture in particular have been the greatest opponents of environmental regulations to protect the reefs. Coral has the best chance of surviving in clean water, and the greatest risk is the combination of warming waters and toxic sediment and pesticides. In 2017, RID was a guest on the Alex Jones Show on Climate Change Denial, and he was interviewed in the Bolt Report, an Australian right-wing program focusing on anti-climate change politics and anti-immigration, argued that climate deniers do not get enough funding. Well, Mr. RID, and your supporters, you got a chance on this show to make an argument, and we're encouraging people to see your full argument. You're a good presenter of your information. But how honest is your presentation? A lot of scientists in my filming, in the most comprehensive documentary ever done on the environment, especially on the coral reefs and the Great Barrier Reef, we would hold a completely different opinion to yours. But I believe in freedom of speech. And hence, you had that opportunity today. Thank you all for watching and listening, and I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.